Welcome to the CCTA Wake Up Call Show. Thank you for joining us. We ask you to visit our sponsors and supporters, and we hope that we give you a lot of information today and stay with us. My name is Bob Griswold.
Mary Griswold.
Lauren Spivak.
Dr. Paul.
Pat Park.
Kim Fink.
Glenn Fink.
Welcome, 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 welcome. Dr. Paul, we're going to give you that first segment. Please.
First of all, thank you guys for having me on. I really appreciate being here in New Bern, and appreciate your show. I was at home, and someone reached out to me and said, we know you're doing the GOP or a couple of speaking engagements out there. Would you get on the show? And I was like, what show? So here I am on the show. So it all worked out well. So I am Dr. Paul Brentley with the North Carolina Faith and Freedom Coalition, and we have a conference coming up in September called the Salt and Light Conference. And we would love to talk about that and get your supporters and listeners all educated on it and maybe have some attendance. And while I'm out here, I would love to give away some tickets.
Where is the convention?
It's going to be in Marion, North Carolina. That's outside of Asheville, just west of Hickory, off I-40.
And you're a native North Carolinian, aren't you?
Yes, ma'am. I am from here, although I don't call myself a Tar Heel because I went to the real University of North Carolina 9 miles up the street from Chapel Hill. Did you go to Chapel Hill?
No, I did not. Okay. I'm a Virginian. I went to William & Mary.
Okay. I went to Duke, so we're sister schools.
Awesome.
Very good.
So tell us about the conference.
Yeah, so it's the largest Christian Policy Council conference in the state, second largest in the country. We'll have about 2,000 people in attendance. Great speakers. Last year, our keynote speaker was Dr. Ben Carson.
Oh, wow.
We've had Peex Hexsett. We've had Judge Jeanine Pirro, Trey Gowdy, all those great folks from Fox, Newsmax. And this year, we're going to be headlining with Mr. Kelly from Greg Kelly from Newsmax. He's going to be one of the headliners.
So you bring people that really, really just very, very soft and soft-spoken and whatever. No, you don't. No,
no.
You don't. You
bring, no opinions.
You bring the leaders.
Yes, sir.
I appreciate you doing that.
Well, Scott Jennings is going to be there. He's not known for his quietness. Guy on CNN.
Neither is Greg Kelly.
That's right.
What is the purpose of the conference?
Well, the number one thing is that we have supporters that are with us all year long, and this is a way to reward them by bringing in talent like this and educating them. We run the largest door-knocking campaign in the state. In 2024, we knocked on just shy of 500,000 doors. Not that we're counting, but it was 400. Let me get the exact number. Not that we're counting. 497,387 doors.
That's a lot.
In the 24 election. And so We want to knock on at least that many doors. We'd love to go over 500,000. So we have paid staff that we reach out to.
Now, when you knock on that many doors, does that help get them out as voters?
Absolutely.
I already know the answer.
Yes, sir. So we target low propensity voters, those that did not vote last year or the previous year. They maybe voted in the primary, didn't vote in the primary. We reach out to them, evangelicals as well. I believe in getting people from the pews to the polls. And so in doing that, we want to get our Christian brothers and sisters out to vote.
Historically, the Christian evangelicals have stayed at home. So
yes.
How do you specifically target the stay-at-homes?
Right. So only one out of four Christians vote. So it's very low. The only way to do it, number one, is to charge the pastors to give that message. Hey, go vote. We're not preaching partisanship. We're just saying go do your civic duty and go vote. And so we need the pastors talking about it, Sunday school teachers talking about it, and then fellow brothers and sisters in the church. You need to take them to the polls with you, because we found out a lot of people just wondering what goes on in there when you go vote. You hear all this media of the cheating and the fraud. So people are not sure. They think my vote's not going to count anyway. So they don't know what's going on. So we like to educate them what goes on behind those doors of the polls.
I took my mother to vote for the first time in her life, and she was already in her 60s. And she was afraid of, she wouldn't know what to do, how to vote.
Right.
And so I went with her behind the little curtain, and mm-hmm. it turned out to be really easy. And darn it, she voted till the end of her life as a staunch Democrat.
Those are the messages that we love to hear, because that's what we find. People just afraid to go vote because they don't know what's happening.
I think that there are some political parties that purposely try to create that aura of fear to keep people away from the polls. I know right now it's happening. It's all over Facebook that there's been that ICE is going to be at all the polls. Mm-hmm. And just trying to discourage people from voting. And my opinion on that is, if you're worried about ICE being at the poll, you shouldn't be at the poll, correct?
I agree, yeah. So people say, well, I don't want to go vote because I don't have ID. Well, good, you shouldn't. But why don't you have ID? You got to have ID to get on an airplane and other things like that. So you should be willing to present your ID, unless it's a fake ID.
I notice on the handout that you gave us that there are candidate position sheets. Do you do those for all elections, and how do they get distributed?
Sure. So this is part of our door knocking campaign. We call them our voter guides, GOTV, get out to vote. And so in doing that, we will highlight two candidates, each one showing which one has a conservative biblical worldview from a nonpartisan, because our organization is a C3. And so when we present that, we just go with the issues and let you see where the candidate either has voted on those issues in the past or is projected to vote on those. So we interview them to find out. And so that palm card or that door hanger will have that information on it for statewide events. And then, as you mentioned, what about local? So on the back of the general, we'll have some local races, either county commissioners, congressional races, state house, Senate races as well.
So you're not only getting out the vote, you're informing the voters.
That's exactly right. Our number one mission is to make sure we educate voters.
Now, I know we're CCTA and nonpartisan. We're a 501c3. And I will do voting. I will do questionnaires to state and local county candidates and again, municipals also, and try to get back relatively short answers to them. And I will ask, I don't try to ask questions that are just going to be a simple yes or no. I try to get the sense of where they're coming from or going to. And it's been great to get that information back and then make it available to online and also in print for various people. People need to be informed.
Exactly.
I want to go back to what you said about you need the pastors to get the word out. Mm-hmm. I think white churches have been scared mm-hmm. to bring up politics, even though we watch black churches talk about it all the time. Mm-hmm. The IRS came out within the last year, I think, and made clear that it's okay to talk about politics in church.
Exactly right.
But
So that is one of my jobs, is to inform pastors on what they can and cannot talk about. So with a C3, you cannot endorse a candidate, but you can endorse policy. And so a lot of pastors just don't know that. You can talk about a candidate that endorsed them as a pastor, you just can't endorse them as the pastor of ABC Church. That's the difference.
The individual separate from the entity.
That's exactly right.
Interesting.
So we need to get out the vote. We need to, I'm going back to a few years ago when the vote exceeded the number of registered voters, and we heard about that even recently in one of the things that the president said. But we need to get out the legitimate vote.
So this says it's North Carolina Faith and Freedom Coalition. With that name, I'm assuming it's a statewide organization. Is there a New Bern chapter, or if people want to get involved in the Faith and Freedom Coalition, where do they and how do they do that?
You could go to our website, ncfaithandfreedom.com. You can also email me, paul@ncfaithandfreedom.com, and I could talk to them more about getting involved in the coalition. But the easiest way is to go on our website and to register there to join the coalition. We don't have local chapters in every county. We have more like regional. So this would be our East guy. His name is, he's a pastor. He ran for Lieutenant Governor Alan Mashburn.
Okay.
We know Alan. Yes.
You've been.
I just have a comment. All of us, I think, would like to have people in office that have integrity and faith. And how does the church expect that to happen if the church doesn't get out and vote?
Yes, you're exactly right. And so we've got to charge and get our church members engaged. Do you remember what it was like to get engaged to Mr. Griswold? Remember what that was like? Were you laughing? Were you smiling? You were excited?
Watch out. It's almost 60 years ago, so no, we don't remember.
You don't remember? If you can remember what that was like, you were his choice. And we've got to get the people in the pews excited again to know that they get a chance to choose a candidate to represent them. So we want to bring that excitement back.
You know, go for it, Glenn.
No, I was just going to say, what techniques, methods, whatever the right word is, do you use to try to engage churches that have chosen to be on the sidelines?
Apolitical.
Yeah.
Yes.
And afraid to even broach it at all.
Right. So some of it is churchy terms, like revival. People understand what that term means. And so we say, can you have revival without the right person in office? And so they start thinking about that. Most revivals started from a position of prayer, and then the government officials were spearheading it and pushing it. So if we don't have the right elected officials in office, we won't have that revival.
I think one of the other things that we need to encourage is that the best leadership begins at the grassroots level. I mean, we need to develop candidates for school boards, for local councils, for local and prove them out as they grow through the process, because we hear of voting only for the president. No, that's not the only vote.
And we know that people that are running in these local elections and are winning, that is not their end game. They want to be in the state house. They want to be in the state senate. They want to be in Congress. They want to be a senator. They want to be the president. And so if we don't talk to them at this level, when you have that one-on-one time, you're not going to have it when they're in Washington.
I just want to mention, you mentioned about the importance of having leaders that are supportive of faith. We saw that during COVID when they closed down the churches. We don't want to do that again.
Absolutely not. And so come to our conference, Salt and Light, in a few months in September. We'd love to have you there.
And we need to remember who was in office during COVID and what their actions were.
Yes.
I'd like to give away a couple of tickets before we go or in our next segment. So if you're interested in tickets, let's do that.
Okay, we're going to take a break to hear from our sponsors and supporters. This is CCTA Wake Up Call.
What's the largest gun shop in Craven County? If you said E70 Pond, you are correct. Since Drew got back from the most recent gun show, new guns have been pouring in faster than they can open the boxes. The large showroom at E70 Pond, slam bam, full of firearms, new guns and used guns, long guns and handguns. You will find weapons for self-defense, hunting, target shooting, and collectibles. The team at E70 Pond is friendly, courteous, and knowledgeable, especially in the area of guns. If E70 Pond doesn't have the gun you are looking for, they'll try to find it. If you want to do a gun transfer, E70 Pond will help you do it right. If you are looking to buy, sell, or trade a gun, there's no better place to do it than E70 Pond. Of course, E70 has tools, electronics, trolling motors, and a great selection of jewelry. But their specialty is guns. And we're talking hundreds of guns. Come see for yourself. E70 Pond, across from Craven County Fairgrounds, New Bern.
Other restaurants claim their food is fresh and fast, but are they friendly? At Moore's, you're treated like family the minute you walk into their doors. With locations in Winterville, New Bern, Swansboro, Moorhead City, and Jacksonville, we've been practicing what we preach since 1945. At Moore's, our barbecue is slow-cooked and smoked over real wood daily until it's so tender it's falling off the bone. Combined with our fresh chicken, cooked-to-order seafood, and homemade fixins, we're sure you'll agree. If it's not Moore's, it's less.
Round here, folks like to talk to each other, get to know you, look you in the eye, and see that you care. We call it the human touch. Whether you were born here or moved here really doesn't matter as far as we're concerned. You're from round here, and since 1905, folks like you have been calling folks like us for their auto, home, life, and business insurance. So come see us, or just give us a call, and we'll get you the best insurance protection possible at a real affordable price. We're Robinson & Stith Insurance, because when you really need help, you'll want somebody from round here.
At Professional Auto Service, keeping vehicles in top form and running well isn't just their business, it's the passion of folks who work there. If baling wire and duct tape is good enough, don't go near them. But if you take pride in your vehicle and reliability is important, go to 2215 Country Club Road in New Bern and let Professional Auto take care of your vehicle. You'll be pleased. That's Professional Auto Service, Country Club Road, New Bern.
Welcome back again. Thank you for listening to the show, and thank you for visiting our sponsors and supporters. Dr. Paul, you want to tell us, you give us your email address, and then, by the way, I guess you are offering some tickets. So I'm going to say, write to Bob at cctaxpayers.com, and for all the respondents, we'll come up with a method to drawing for those, to give away those tickets.
Excellent. Yes, sir. We are going to give away some tickets. So you can write me if you want to just follow it with me. The question was asked earlier, how do we inspire pastors to talk about voting? Sometimes they don't want to talk, and so I don't mind coming into those churches, small groups, Sunday school classes, Sunday night service, Wednesday midweek, whatever the pastor is open to, and I can share the message about the education on getting out to vote. You can reach me at paul@ncfaithandfreedom.com, and is spelled out, paul@ncfaithandfreedom.com.
Thank you, Dr. Paul.
Appreciate your time, appreciate your efforts, and we're looking for the success in everything that you do there. Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
Nice to meet you. I'll be in touch. Okay.
All right, so we're going to continue with the show, and where are we heading to now? Oh.
We're heading to humor.
We're heading to...
we're heading to knowledge and humor.
We're heading to economics.
Economics.
I just wanted to bust your balloon. Everybody knows economics is really funny. Only you can make it funny, Lauren.
Well, you know, that's right. So we know how not to do economics as a country. So now, what do you have to add?
You mean about how to do economics as a country?
Well, let's not get into the debt that we're in. So.
Let's back up a minute. Let's say who he is and why he's here and what he does. Otherwise, people are going to be saying, huh?
Okay. Huh?
Introduce yourself.
Go ahead.
Well, my name is Lauren Spivak, mm-hmm. and I speak to conservative groups around the United States on topics that are more or less related to economics. I try to help people understand concepts that are not broadly understood. So, would you like some examples?
Sure.
Oh, please. Yeah, yeah.
I was giving a talk today, which is kind of what started all of this, about how it's incorrect to think that the left and the right politically just have different principles that they disagree about. The conservative movement is all about principles. Principles in the Bible, principles in the Constitution. We're about fixed principles that don't change.
Unwavering.
And the whole conservative movement is about sticking to those time-tested principles that we've learned over the course of literally millennia work. The left is not about principled anything. They are what I was focusing on in today's talk. They are a movement of power. Basically, when you're voting for socialism, you are not voting for a specific set of principles. They will try to convince you that there are, and it's completely not true. What you're voting for is that they will make your decisions in the future, and you won't. That's what you get when you.
And you'll like it.
Well, yes. They will make sure that you like it one way or the other. So that's what you're voting for. To say that your decisions will now be made by them, and there's no fixed or even predictable way that's going to play out. They also tend to have these ideas that kind of come and go over time, that are based on, and this is what my tomorrow's talk is going to be about, are based on visions. One of the things in the talk that I'm going to give tomorrow, I start with, is the controversy from the 1970s when I was growing up over sex education in the schools. And nobody in the history of the world ever thought to do that before. This was like this brand new idea out of the blue, which is where all left-wing ideas come from. They say conservatives believe in looking what thousands of years of history have taught us. The left believes that history is bad. Those are bad people doing bad stuff back there. And we need to replace it all with what popped into my head 10 minutes ago. That's leftism in a nutshell. So what popped into their head 10 minutes ago in the 1970s was that the school, as opposed to the parents, needed to teach kids about sex. And the reason that they gave for this is that the teen pregnancy rate was too high, and so we have to bring this into the curriculum so the kids will understand where babies come from, and that will bring the teen pregnancy rate down. So they won the argument, and every school in America is doing sex education. What happened to the teen pregnancy rates?
It went
through the roof. We ended up with the highest. So did they apologize? Did they take it back? Did they say, well, that didn't work, let's try something different? No, because the key thing you have to understand about left-wing visions is that they're not disprovable. No matter what happens, they're always right because they are not subject to the laws of science and logic because they're visions.
Well, I think they're also developed in a quiet academic environment with no outside influences into their formulas or thinking.
Well, yeah, but the key outside influence that's not there is actual experience.
And the outside influence is human depravity.
Which is the way we figure out everything else. Mm. If you are an automobile manufacturer and you want to make automobiles better, you look at what works and what doesn't and try to, you don't start from scratch. You don't have a vision of how a car might work that has nothing to do with how they've worked up to this point.
I think it's more nefarious than that. I think that the outside influence is the agenda, because none of this is done without an agenda. If you look back to the Saul Alinsky and the Rules for Radicals, it was take the schools, take the children's.
Okay, but it depends what you mean by agenda. They don't have an agenda in terms of a list of things they specifically want to achieve. The only agenda is that they make your decisions and you don't. Okay. They have no idea what decisions they're going to make for you in the future. When we get there, then they'll figure it out.
You mentioned about visions. The problem is that many of these visions are not encumbered by real-world experience.
None of them are.
Yeah.
They're the opposite of real-world experience. So it's not like some of them are not completely controlled by real-world experience. None of them have anything to do because they're the exact opposite. Real-world experience is on one side over here. The visions are completely disconnected over here. That is my point.
This,
yes, ma'am.
This weekend we were at a conference, and there was a speaker there that was a Chinese refugee who was actually imprisoned in China as a religious captive, tortured emotionally, physically, mentally for several years. And his message to us is basically, America, wake up. Communism has never worked anywhere in the world, and it's not going to work here. And you have no idea what you're risking and the people that you're listening to and electing. And I think that that's important for all of us to look at when we're looking at the democratic socialists that are coming out. That's just communism light, and you need to look at what their, quote, agenda is and what's on their platform, because it is not
what we have.
And you know, Friedrich Hayek, who is one of my favorite economists, and in The Road to Serfdom, which is, in my humble opinion, is the most important book written in the 20th century, he talks about why communism has to be like this. If you have a society based on freedom, and freedom, by the way, is a principle, okay? We have principles, they don't. Freedom is a principle, and if it's based on freedom, we can all live with the economic outcomes of that because they're based on our own choices. If I make a bad investment and it turns out, you know, I have no one to blame but myself. Next time, I'll try to do a better job of figuring out what a good investment is. When you have, on the other hand, the economy run by the government, okay, then their mistakes harm everybody, but they can't admit to mistakes, because if you have an economy that's run by the government, why is this, the question you're obviously going to ask yourself is, why does this particular government, why does this guy, why does Mao or Lenin or whoever it is, why does he get to make the decisions? And the answer has to be that he makes perfect decisions. He is as good as it's going to be. So to even suggest that there could be anything better than the government we have under socialism / communism is an affront to the whole system. See, I as a capitalist, I can readily admit I didn't make the best business decisions last year. Next year, I'll try to do better because I'm human and everyone tries to do their best. And there's no such thing as perfection in capitalism. We make mistakes all the time. But in socialism, it's based on the assumption that the government is perfect. And so if you say, well, the government is only 99% perfect, they'll put you in a concentration camp. Yep. Because it has to be 100% perfect, because if it's not 100% perfect, why am I putting up with this government if there could be one even better? So that's it's the nature of the beast. Yes, ma'am.
Going back to the left has no principles, you can tell that when you say to them, socialism has never worked. And you can tell by their answer, which is, well, it's never been tried correctly before.
Yeah, well, they being a socialist is always running away from every previous example. That was just Mao, that was just Stalin, they just screwed it up, but now we're going to do it. And you know, it's a clever trick, because ultimately it can never be proved wrong. You know, we could try 900 million billion experiments with socialism, and 100% of them could fail. It won't make a difference to them at all. They'll say, "Yeah, but this time I got it right." And so again, the conservatives are all about learning from the past and actual experience of what works and what doesn't. They're about visions. They're not playing this game at all of looking at history. If you're a leftist, history is bad.
Yeah.
You're good. Everything before you is bad.
Well,
that's a key belief of leftists.
Yeah, you need to have principles even in socialism. Otherwise, you don't have a benchmark to measure success.
But they don't, because success to them is that they're in control.
And
right.
And again, Margaret Thatcher summarized it. They said socialism works until you run out of other people's money.
Yeah, under Mao, 50 million Chinese starved to death. Did that? He would have called it a success.
The new
okay. Everything was going great from Mao's perspective.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, the yeah. fact that 50 million people starved to death. Ah well.
Yeah.
On we go.
The new Prime Minister of England started off his initial speech by slamming Margaret Thatcher. That's not a good sign.
Sure. And Margaret Thatcher, I mean, it's one of the most fascinating and yet frustrating things that I deal with, is that every time we've tried a Ronald Reagan or a Margaret Thatcher, it's worked great. Every time we've tried socialism, it's been an absolute disaster, and millions of people start to starve to death. You would think by now people would say, well, it's pretty obvious which works and which doesn't. But for some reason, it's like a vampire movie where you just can't slay the vampire.
Okay. Folks, on that, we're going to take another quick break to hear from our sponsors and supporters. Again, thank you for listening. Thank you for staying with us.
Since 1952, the North Carolina Fisheries Association has been working to ensure access for fishermen and consumers to enjoy fresh local seafood. The North Carolina Fisheries Association is for fair, science-based fisheries management for commercial and recreational fishermen. If you agree with this philosophy, become a member. For more information, log on to ncfish.org. For fresh North Carolina seafood, there's no better place than B&J Seafood, Highway 70 East in New Bern.
Around here, folks like to talk to each other, get to know you, look you in the eye, and see that you care. We call it the human touch. Whether you were born here or moved here really doesn't matter as far as we're concerned. You're from around here, and since 1905, folks like you have been calling folks like us for their auto, home, life, and business insurance. So come see us, or just give us a call, and we'll get you the best insurance protection possible at a real affordable price. We're Robinson & Stith Insurance, because when you really need help, you'll want somebody from around here.
Just who are these people doing this CCTA program? People in the community that love this country to protect individual liberty and to preserve the U.S. Constitution and free enterprise system. To learn more, go to cctaxpayers.com. That's cctaxpayers.com. Join Coastal Carolina Taxpayers Association and make your voice heard.
Welcome back again. Thank you for listening to the sponsors and supporters. Lauren, can you give us your email? We're going to go into a segment on books.
Okay, well, we'll probably want to do this at the end.
Oh, we'll do it multiple times.
Okay. You can email me, and this relates to the books, at obamaparody@gmail.com. Obama, as in the former president, parody, P-A-R-O-D-Y, @gmail.com. It was an email we had set up when I had my original book, which was a parody of Obama, and then it kind of grew from there.
I want to go back to what you said a minute ago about the economy and stuff. And yesterday on the news, there was a man on the street, and he was talking about, what do you think the problem is? Is it a spending problem or a taxing problem? And this person said that we need to be taxing the billionaires, and the billionaires are getting a free ride and blah, blah, blah. Anyhow, the commentator said, do you realize how many billionaire trillionaires there are and how much money total that is? And the guy didn't know, so he told him, and it was like $17 trillion or some, or maybe it was $19 trillion. Anyhow, he said, well, the debt is over $17 trillion. So if you took all the billionaires' money, it wouldn't even fund the government for 2 years. It'd be fun.
Yeah, sure. If you took all the money and just left them naked in the street.
Right. And that was referring to Bob's, everybody's money once.
But that's absolutely true. But let me throw another point in from the other end of this. I would tell you that the billionaires are the only people who are not getting a free ride. The fact behind all of this, which nobody wants to deal with, is that some people are hugely more productive in a modern economy than other people. The people like an Elon Musk or a Mark Zuckerberg or
Bill Gates.
These are people who incredibly change the way the entire world works, and they develop ideas or technologies that are used by billions of people around the world, and that is just hugely more effective. So they're not getting a free ride at all. In fact, if one of the basic laws of economics, this is the sort of thing that I do talks on, is that when people exchange things, both sides are better off than they were to begin with. Otherwise, they wouldn't do it. Okay, if I go to McDonald's and buy a hamburger for $5 or whatever it
please
is,
please don't.
where do you want me to go? Chick-fil-A. If I go to Hardee's and buy their French fries, okay, they're better off and I'm better off because we wouldn't have done it otherwise.
Right.
If I did not prefer the French fries to the money, I could have just kept my money.
Right.
And if they preferred the French fries to my money, they could have just kept their French fries. We both benefit all the time. So when a Bill Gates becomes a billionaire, it's because billions of people bought his software, which means they valued his software more than they valued the money that they spent on his software, because they could have just kept the money in their pocket and not bought the software. Therefore, he's by almost by definition, he's earned every dollar he's got. That's more than you can say for the government. The government. Okay. So what the progressives want to do is take money away from the people who've actually earned it, and give it, you know, not even to like starving poor people. They want to give it to government bureaucrats who produce nothing. So you're taking resources away from the most productive people in society and handing them to the least productive people in society. Okay, can you see a problem with that?
Yeah.
Okay? I mean, that's a problem. And this is what communists always do. In third world countries in the 70s, when there would be a communist revolution, they would take land away from the most productive peasants, because they were the rich ones, and give it to the least productive peasants. And then, like clockwork, everyone would start starving to death. Mm-hmm. That's what happens when you do this. Everyone starts starving to death because you're taking the resources away from the productive people and giving it to the non-productive people.
And you know
to deny that there aren't like productive and non-productive people, you're just not paying attention. There totally are.
When Soviet Union was having problems with their economy, I think this was back in the 70s or maybe the 80s, they gave the kulaks, the peasants that were productive, they let them have their private acreage, and they were actually feeding the country on what they grew on the private acreage instead of the collective farms.
Yeah, eventually all of these systems have to kind of grudgingly allow in a little bit just so the entire society doesn't collapse in starvation. You see the same thing in Cuba. You even see the same thing in North Korea, where they allow this kind of slight vagabond capitalism where you can kind of like wander around the countryside buying and selling things, which technically you're not supposed to do, but they realize everyone's going to starve if you don't let that happen. So I mean, this is one of the most proved concepts in the history of the human race, which is that freedom and capitalism, which are the same thing. Okay, capitalism is simply economic freedom that you get to pursue your own economic goals, that results in prosperity, and trying to choke it off results in poverty and misery. I mean, I can't think of anything. 2 + 2 = 4 hasn't been proved as thoroughly as that's been proved.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk about your books.
Sure. Oh,
but
okay.
We're having too much fun on this.
I thought you were gonna. What do you want me to do? Just list them?
Yeah. Well.
Okay. Yes. I write somewhat unique parody books that try to teach conservative lessons in a humorous sort of way. So my first book, I'm not sure why I'm holding it up to the microphone, but it's my habit. My first book is called The New Democrat. It is a parody of the Obama administration based on The Cat in the Hat. So it's in rhyme. It's The Cat in the Hat, only it's about Obama. Reed and Pelosi are thing one and thing two. And it humorously tells the story of the Obama years. I got my first book review on this one. Salon.com called it the most twisted piece of conservative propaganda print matter out there.
That's quite an endorsement.
I put that on the cover. You should have seen me the day I ran into that. I was like, stop the presses. We got something to add to the cover.
Got to add it.
That's great.
My second book is called The Gorax. It is a parody of The Lorax by Dr. Seuss, which is an environmentalist book about how capitalists are destroying the environment, which is nonsense. And my book is actually showing how the environmentalists are destroying our country. And amazingly enough, they're doing it for profit. The environmentalists make money by destroying our economy and making everybody else poor. Did I tell you that there's only three economic activities that actually expand the economy? One is if you bring new things to market that previously were outside the market, like if you went to an island somewhere and picked the fruit and brought them back to the marketplace. Okay. The second that it actually expands the economy is buying and selling, because everything moves from where it's less valued to where it's more valued. So if you take a bottle of French wine and ship it to the United States, it's now worth more here than it was there, and therefore the economy has grown. Like, even though this is the same stuff, it's worth more where it is now. And the third thing the second thing in between those two is when you transform something from a less valuable form to a more valuable form. Like if I cut down a tree and use the wood to make a piece of furniture, let's say, the furniture at the end of the process is worth more than the tree was because I've added my labor to it and made it a more valuable thing. So those are the only three things that actually expand the economy. All other economic transactions are like predatory. Somebody benefits, but somebody else loses. So for example, a mugging. If a mugger points a gun at you and says, give me your wallet, that's an economic transaction, but it has not expanded the wealth of the country. Just the mugger has your money and you don't. Okay?
It's like DraftKings.com.
Nobody gained. The economy did not expand because of that. Well, government is simply a big mugger. Okay, government says, give me 30% of your income or we'll throw you in prison. Okay, so they have the money and you don't, but the economy is no bigger than it was before. Did I get distracted? Yes, I did. The Wizard of Oz, my fourth book, is a parody of The Wizard of Oz with the concept that Bill Clinton became the wizard. It's called The Wizard of Oz. So in the book, they say, are you the Wizard of Oz? He says, it all depends on your definition of Oz. Hillary is the Wicked Witch. There also, if you recall, there was a cowardly lion in the original book. I replaced it with a cowardly rhino who suspects the Democrats are wrong, but he's too scared to do anything about it. And it begins when Dorothy's house lands on Obama and she finds herself in the land of the free lunchkins who've been living off the government for so long they've forgotten how to take care of themselves. To think that I saw it on CNN Live, we're up to book five, four, is about the media and Trump. It's the Trump story. This is the only one of my books that's narrated by the bad guy. It is told through the eyes of a pathologically dishonest media, and most of the humor comes from the media's bizarre interpretation of everything that's happening around them. It's got headlines like asteroid headed toward Earth, scientists blame Trump.
Of course.
And let's see, what are we up to? Then we've got Motley Click. CLIQUE is based on Moby Dick. And it's about the whole critical race theory, identity politics world that we're living in. It's about a ship full of social justice warriors that's out hunting for the great white racist.
Oh.
But they end up catching each other. They keep finding these flaws in each other's wokeness. It's a very ironic story about how the professional anti-racists are the most racist people you're ever going to meet. My next book, The Fisherman's Husband, is a parody of the LGBTQIA plus minus divided by sign movement based on The Fisherman's Wife, which is a fairy tale about pushing things too far. Mm. It's about how the gay rights movement started out with leave us alone and ended up with just pure insanity as they got crazier and crazier, and now they want to trans your kids. And then my latest book that's out is called Camelot with a K. Is a parody of the Biden administration done as the King Arthur legend, with Biden as a kind of a senile King Arthur. This one is also a musical. This is my first book where the characters break into song throughout. Nancy Pelosi sings Speaker of the House, which is to the tune of Master of the House from Les Mis. Hunter Biden sings If Daddy Were a Big Shot, which is to the tune of If I Were a Rich Man from Fiddler on the Roof. And my eighth book, which is out, I'm literally waiting for them to be sent to me, is called Pedagogio. It's a parody of Pinocchio about the public school system in the United States today. And that's where we are in my books. They're unique. And if you want them, you can email me obamaparody@gmail.com.
You know, the books that you're talking about, now you've written these over a period of time, they are all timeless books.
Yeah, well, I thought that the first one would stop selling when Obama left office, and it hasn't.
No.
Like, none of them stopped selling. So I was very happy about that.
You're assuming Obama's left office.
They've kept selling, so yes. Okay. I was hoping for timeless, and I seem to have achieved it.
Good. Folks, we're going to take another quick break to hear from our sponsors and supporters. Again, thank you for staying with us.
At
Professional Auto Service, keeping vehicles in top form and running well isn't just their business, it's the passion of folks who work there. If baling wire and duct tape is good enough, don't go near them. But if you take pride in your vehicle and reliability is important, go to 2215 Country Club Road in New Bern and let Professional Auto take care of your vehicle. You'll be pleased. That's Professional Auto Service, Country Club Road, New Bern.
Other restaurants claim their food is fresh and fast, but are they friendly? At Moore's, you're treated like family the minute you walk into their doors. With locations in Winterville, New Bern, Swansboro, Moorhead City, and Jacksonville, we've been practicing what we preach since 1945. At Moore's, our barbecue is slow-cooked and smoked over real wood daily until it's so tender it's falling off the bone. Combined with our fresh chicken, cooked-to-order seafood, and homemade fixins, we're sure you'll agree. If it's not Moore's, it's less.
Since 1952, the North Carolina Fisheries Association has been working to ensure access for fishermen and consumers to enjoy fresh local seafood. The North Carolina Fisheries Association is for fair, science-based fisheries management for commercial and recreational fishermen. If you agree with this philosophy, become a member. For more information, log on to ncfish.org. For fresh North Carolina seafood, there's no better place than B&J Seafood, Highway 70 East in New Bern.
The County Compass is a rapidly growing, free weekly newspaper throughout eastern North Carolina. At the County Compass, we believe small business is the future of our great nation. Many small business owners have discovered that an ad in the County Compass each week is the most effective, the most affordable way to reach thousands of readers from all walks of life. At the County Compass, we focus entirely on local and regional news, coverage of important issues that directly affect your life. At the County Compass, we love our readers and we love our advertisers. This Thursday and every Thursday at more than 750 distribution points throughout eastern North Carolina, pick up your free copy of the County Compass newspaper.
Welcome back again. Thank you for listening to our sponsors and supporters, and thank you for staying with the CCTA Wake Up Call. Now we're going, Lauren, we're going to...
Do you want to talk to us a little bit about your theory on the price of oil?
Well, my observation on the price of oil is that it was supposed to go up to $200 a barrel or $250 a barrel.
We all feared that.
Exactly. If the Straits of Hormuz were closed, and this is not a new thing. I've been hearing this my entire life. I went back in the 80s. You know, the Straits of Hormuz ever get shut down? Oh my gosh, a gallon of gasoline is going to cost more than your car cost. With the Straits of Hormuz now has been closed twice. The first time it spiked over 100 for like a couple days, but then settled to 90. It was closed for weeks and weeks and weeks, and oil was 90. And now it's closed again, and oil is up to 86. 56, it just changed. It's now $86, which is even less than it was the last time that it was open. And by the way, there's a bunch of people out there saying, oh, but any minute now, the reserves are going to run out, and then, I don't believe that. I absolutely don't. Markets are future-oriented institutions. Mm-hmm. The people who make their living investing in oil, okay, this is what they do, who are the ones who are determining these prices, they know more about how the oil markets works than you and I do.
Why they call it futures.
Yeah, exactly. underestimating the wisdom of the people who actually do this every single day of their life, and there's a whole world of people who invest in oil, they know more than I do. And I'm willing to assume that they're not just completely off the wall and have no idea that oil is suddenly going to jump up to $300 a barrel any minute now. I don't believe that. And it's really interesting why it hasn't happened. And because everyone is so partisan these days, the Republicans want to argue that, you know, oil is not really that bad. And then the Democrats want to argue that it's the worst oil market ever in the history of the planet. We're missing the point. It's like, why? This is the dog that didn't bark. Why did this not happen with a shutdown Strait of Hormuz? And by the way, I will add that at the exact same time, the Ukrainians are blowing the Russians' oil infrastructure to kingdom come. Okay, at the same time, Russian oil stuff is getting blown up all over the place. So these two things are happening at the same time, and this thing still can't get back to even 90, which it was the last time. This is really interesting. There's several answers that I've run into. There may be more. I could miss something. But one answer is that the Western Hemisphere produces way more oil than it ever did before. It's partly the United States, but it's partly South America. Argentina is getting back online since that nut Maduro's out of there. They're actually starting to get online and get some oil going.
Venezuela.
What did I say? Oh, I said Argentina. You're right. Sorry, Venezuela. I meant Venezuela. Also, off Guyana, they apparently found some oil fields just a couple of years ago, which are producing 3 million barrels a day. The United States is producing more. Canada is producing more. And by the way, there's an even larger point just on this point, which is that the concept that I heard back in the 80s, that we were at peak oil and it was going to go downhill from here is complete nonsense. It is a reasonable working assumption that we will never, never run out of oil. We are finding it so much faster than we're using it. It's just incredible. So this old idea from decades ago that, oh, we're going to run out. No, we're not. We keep finding more. The fact that we don't even particularly need the Straits of Hormuz these days is a perfect sign of exactly that. The second is that the Chinese apparently have way bigger oil stocks than we ever thought they had, which is very important for the future of geopolitics, because the Chinese were also the dog that didn't bark in this. They were the ones who get all the Iranian oil. They hardly made a peep during this entire war. They're just like, fine. Like, why aren't the Chinese howling and going hysterical? Because it turns out we thought they had like X amount of oil reserves. It turns out they have like 100 times X amount of oil, and they've got so many oil reserves they can wait out whole wars and not have a problem with it. The best story I heard was that at the minute there was a ceasefire, the Iranians sent a couple tankers full of oil to China, because that's where all their oil goes. And the Chinese refused to buy it because the Iranians wanted a full market price and the Chinese wanted a discount. This does not sound like a country that's starving for oil. Okay? They're like haggling over the price and refusing to take it. So this is very important, because when China invades Taiwan, which they're probably going to do at some point, our whole strategy was to cut off their oil supply, because the Chinese don't have a navy that can like go out into the world. It's like a coast guard. It can't go more than 100 miles from the Chinese shore. So our big United States Navy, which is easily the biggest Navy on Earth, was going to block off the Chinese oil as punishment for invading Taiwan. What we've learned by accident here is that that won't work, that the Chinese don't care if you cut off their oil, because they've got enough reserves to last them for, you know, the next 100 years or whatever. So this is very important. Like, there's a really important lesson to be learned there. I would have told you that we could just cut off China's oil to get them out of Taiwan, but now I know it won't work. So, and they're also the Saudis and everyone else is working on making pipelines to get their oil around the Iranians, because they all hate the Iranians worse than we do. And regardless of how this war ends up, Saudi Arabia and Iraq and Kuwait and all those countries never want to be beholden to the Iranian regime ever again. So they're like, darn it all, when this is over, we are going to have a totally different way to get our oil out of here, because we're not living with this nonsense anymore.
And it's interesting, as you say, that the Iranian regime, not necessarily the Persian people as such, but that regime needs to totally go away.
Oh, absolutely. It's horrible. And fascinatingly, the Persian people are great.
Yes.
A lot of these Arab countries, Egypt, Syria, are like hyper-violent camel traders, and the population is scarier than the government. Egypt's a classic example. Remember the Arab Spring, where we briefly had a democracy in Egypt? Democracy in Egypt was the worst thing ever, because they elected the total loonies to run the country.
Yes.
So we had to, like, fund the Egyptian military to knock out the democracy to get sane people back in charge again. You don't want democracy in Egypt. Okay? In Iran, if you had a democracy in Iran, they'd be our best friends. They're the most pro-Western population in the entire Middle East, except for Israel, obviously. We'd actually, if we had a democracy in Iran, we'd have like a bunch of friendly people who like would like us. It couldn't be more of a contrast. Yes, ma'am.
The thing that is so frustrating is if you go back to the 1970s, we have a friend who was a TWA stewardess, and the places they loved going were Beirut, Lebanon, and Tehran, Iran, because those were the garden spots of the Middle East in the 1970s. That was before the Muslims took over Lebanon and before the Muslims took over Iran. And they were places where the stewardess could go, they could shop, they were safe. It wasn't burqas, it was people looking like Westerners, and it was a market economy. And what happened was after the Palestinians got kicked out of Jordan, and I use the word Palestinian loosely because there really isn't any such thing, but anyway,
I like to say the Arabs who have come to refer to themselves as Palestinians.
Thank you.
Is the term I use.
After they got kicked out of Jordan for trying to overthrow the Jordan government, Lebanon said, well, we have peace between the Christians, the Jews, and the Arabs. You can come here. There won't be a problem. And unfortunately, that was the beginning of the Lebanese Civil War.
Yeah, well, one of the things that's happening throughout the Arab world is that Christians are being driven out of all of these Muslim countries. Lebanon used to essentially be a Christian country.
Yep.
And through years of persecution, if you look at a chart, the Christian population, and so now it's run by crazy Muslims, and it's a horrible, scary place, and you'd be insane to go there. They'd kidnap you, and no one would ever see you again. This is very important, because I think there are some Americans who think, well, you know, it's just the Israelis, it's just the Jews, and so why should we worry about that? Yeah, if you think that they wouldn't kill American Christians or Arab Christians for that matter with every bit as much alacrity as they're willing to kill the Jews in Israel, you just don't know what's going on.
Well, also what's happening is
something we all ought to be consider ourselves a part of, I think.
What's happening in Lebanon right now is that the Lebanese army has been mobilized enough so that they're working with Israel to get rid of Hezbollah. Whether that's possible and how long it will take, I don't know. But Trump is meeting with the president of Lebanon right now, who has evidently developed a backbone and is talking about kicking Hezbollah out.
Queers for Palestine.
Yeah.
Yeah. The people that belong to that organization just do not get how Muslims think about them. And they apparently didn't think that they would be in threat of any harm. But now we see the gay crews that the Muslims won't let dock on their shores. Have you read about that
in
one?
Turkey and Egypt.
I saw a cartoon where this guy is being hurled off a roof. And the caption was, Palestine for gays.
Well, there was somebody, and I forget who it was, that offered $1,000 to anyone who was willing to organize a gay pride parade in Gaza.
Yeah.
Somehow no one took him up on his offer.
Yeah, the red-green alliance between the leftists and and the Muslims is a fascinating phenomenon, and it kind of, I don't know if you heard my talk today, I was talking about how the leftists don't get along with each other, and this is kind of a macro example of that, because the only thing that the leftists in the West and the Muslims have in common is they both hate Western civilization.
Yeah.
They hate us, and they want to destroy us. Western civilization is capitalism. It's Christianity, it's the Bible, it's the whole heritage of the West. And they hate it, they both hate it, they want to destroy it. And so they will work with each other, and they are to destroy it. As soon as we're gone, they will be at each other's throats.
Oh, yeah.
2 seconds after the last one of us falls, the Muslims and the communists will be killing each other because they have nothing in common. And by the way, in case you're wondering, the Muslims will win. When the Shah was overthrown in 1978, that was a coalition within Iran that was against the Shah. It included the Iranian communists, who weren't religious at all because they were communists, but they hated the Shah because he was like a hereditary ruler and he was pro-Western. And the Muslims hated the Shah because he was, you know, a moderate. And they worked together to overthrow him. You know what happened when Khomeini came to power?
He killed the
communists. He killed the communists. Of course he did. Okay, but the communists don't seem to care about this because they will work with anybody to get their goal, which is to destroy us.
Excellent. Excellent. You know, thank you, Lauren, for coming on the show. We appreciate the various things that we went through, and we hope that you, again, give us the address for your books. ObamaParody@gmail.com. ObamaParody@gmail.com. That's right. Okay. Again, thank you for listening to CCTA Wake Up Call.